What's up, everybody? Welcome to another MoGraph MoCast. I'm Matt. Joining me this week from Yon Studio, the super great Mr. Kyle Krueger.
Howdy, howdy. Thanks for having me on.
Everyone hear us okay? You know, I have the, I'm really stupid about actually checking the audio ahead of time. All right, cool. I checked the audio on YouTube. We're good. We're good.
That's yeah, we're good. All right.
All right, cool. Yeah, so super excited to have you here. We've known each other for a couple of years, you know, and interested to talk about the studio and stuff. You got a really interesting story about it and very great, you know, and lots of fun. But first up, I want to thank our universal sponsor, Otoy. They're the makers of Octane Render and the Render Network. With Octane, you can create super photorealistic renders incredibly fast. And for those renders that need the extra push of power, the Render Network has you covered. The Render Network allows you to render your Octane and Redshift frames in a fraction of the time and a fraction of the cost of other cloud rendering services. And RenderCon, introducing the first, well, I don't know if it's annual, we'll see. The first RenderCon, it's April 15th. You can use the promo code MoGraph for a free ticket. It's going to be a all-day event. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of interesting speakers, Jules Urbach, Ari Emanuel. We're going to be talking everything from 3D rendering, large language models, AI. Mr. Mike Beeple will be there doing a simulcast, I guess. I don't know. He'll be like streaming, be doing his daily, I'm assuming. And a lot of presentations and a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're in the LA area or California and you're going to be around there April 15th, you should come out to RenderCon. Go to lu.ma/RenderCon or renderfoundation.com/RenderCon and use the promo code MoGraph for a free ticket. Yeah. So thanks to them. Also say thank you to Otoy for sponsoring the show. But yeah, I'm going to hop into the one headline that I have. And then we're going to talk to you, Kyle, and find out about a little bit about you. Let's see.
All right.
And speaking of events, the one headline that I've got for this week is the annual NAB 2025 MoGraph Meetup, the School of Motion hosted MoGraph Meetup. They just released it. If you go to School of Motion's website or just, man, this is so dumb. I should have had this up. I subscribe to their newsletter every week, so I get that School of Motion MoGraph Meetup nab. Yeah, there you go. So if you just do a quick Google search for School of Motion MoGraph Meetup, you'll see it. It's on Eventbrite. NAB MoGraph Meetup 2025. Yeah. Hosted by School of Motion, you can get your free ticket. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's at Tom's Urban again this year. Yeah, Tom's Watch Bar, which is great. It's right across the street from the MGM. It's connected to the New York, New York. And it's a lot of fun every year. So super excited about that. Also, if you're going to be there for that one, make sure and hit us up or go to the MoGraph groups page, the MoGraph.com/groups/MoGraph. And you can get to the MoGraph and iDesign Carrie Mokey party that we're doing together, which is going to be a lot of fun. I'm super excited about that. Free tickets as well. You can find that on the MoGraph groups page. So yeah, super excited to have you here, Kyle. Yeah, you are executive producer. That's what you've got on your Instagram.
Yes, that's the title I've bestowed upon
myself. When you own the company, you can pick the title, right? That's why I am CEO of MoGraph LLC.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, talk to me about Yon Studios. Talk to me a little bit about what y'all do. The work that y'all do is incredible. Like, I love the style. I'm incredibly jealous of the stuff that y'all are doing and the stuff that y'all are featuring. So
yeah, thanks. I mean, Yon is really, it's really three people. And that's the core of it. It's not one person. It's all of us together. And that's the extremely talented Andrew Marston, who you may know if in school motion circles, he's basically your animator's favorite animator. He is, I mean, an absolute wizard in them keys, mm-hmm. And just thinks in a way systematically that I can't. I lovingly refer to him as Data on the Starship. He is fantastic. And then obviously then Alesis Heaps, who's the wonderfully creative director for us. She can't say enough wonderful things about her and what she brings in her vision and, you know, what she brings to the table. So, and then there's just me. And I wake up every day and I'm just very, very lucky to work with two extremely talented people. And it's really, so far, it's been an interesting study and a bit of a triad of the balance of three and the beauty of things in threes and what we all bring to the table and how we balance each other out. And it's just been really nice to go along this together, mm-hmm. And kind of be there for each other the whole time.
That's cool. Talk to me about the creation, because I feel like I have a bit of a little bit.
yeah. I think, you know, it's interesting. It's definitely a School of Motion and / Camp MoGraph story. Mm-hmm. So I'll kind of, I don't want to go too chronological, but like, let me start with, it started where I was in a School of Motion course with this guy who was like everywhere and was getting homework done and just insane. I was like, who the fuck is this dude? And it ended up being this guy, Andrew. Mm-hmm. And Andrew and I ended up striking up a friendship. We have a ton in common. I, again, can't say enough good things about the guy. And for a while, we kind of wanted to do something, but there was a missing link we had. Like, mm-hmm. We didn't quite have the piece. We tried something. It didn't quite work, but we knew we wanted to work together. And so I had met Andrew, and then I went to Camp MoGraph not knowing a soul.
Oh, that's awesome. Not knowing
anybody. I literally was like the person that goes on solo vacation. And of course you show up, uh-huh. and then it was the one in Virginia.
Yeah.
So it's just like, cool. I'm going to go on a van with a bunch of strangers for like, remember that bridge is just like forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, it gets a little banjo-y where they yep. were. And I was just like, cool.
That's the whole point. But yeah.
It was great. I just still remember the first time I was there, and I was trying to be a freelance motion designer. Mm-hmm. And at the time I had a kind of a weird dust up with the studio. And I just remember I was really in my head about it. And I just happened to talk to this person on a path, and it happened to be Alesis. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're one of the coolest people I've ever met. Yeah. And that was really great. And so we stayed in touch and did these, she was leading up this group called Pitmo. So they were doing all these Pittsburgh MoGraph challenges. Alesis is in Pittsburgh. Andrew is in Arizona, in Prescott, Arizona. And we kind of stayed in touch there. And then the second Camp MoGraph was in Colorado, or the one that I attended, rather. I think that was four. I think. That was Colorado, the rainy one. And so Andrew and I had just tried to kind of start something and realized that it wasn't quite working. And then I just happened to sit on a picnic bench with Alesis, and I was like, hey, I got this crazy idea. Are you down to talk? And then we just sort of started working together on some jobs. I was like, hey, I think this is a thing. And lo and behold, that's how it started. And then this last Camp MoGraph, it was just a lot of fun to kind of show up as a squad. Unfortunately, Andrew couldn't be there with us, but it was great. You know, we had like ordered these really cool jackets, and they were way too fucking hot, but like, it was just fun to kind of like walk around and just kind of know that that's kind of our origin there. And it just felt good to see the maturation of it, you know, of year three. And I think it just speaks to the power of community, and the amount of support we got was unbelievable from people. And it's just been great. And I think that's like, to me, it's always been this thing about, I think we've been really isolated, especially since COVID, and we feel like we have connection with all of our Discord servers and all of our group texts and whatnot. That doesn't hold a candle to sitting down with somebody. Mm-hmm. And like I met you playing Phase 10, knowing that obscure grandma game that got real heated. And by the way, I did take the dub for the record.
I forgot. See, I had so much fun. I didn't think about who won or lost.
I kept the receipts, Matt. But Sorry, I digress from my humble breath. I think it speaks to like the importance of people being together and spending time and going through things together as a team. And it's really great. I couldn't have asked for a more of a movie type thing where I'd quit my corporate job. My plan was literally a middle finger, which I successfully had. Yeah. And I had literally no plan. I had no plan at all. And I just dove right in. And that was the best. I remember I was sitting in my old corporate. They had this very like Lumen-esque, like big enclave right when you walk in. And I was sitting there in the middle of a conference, like refresh, refresh, refresh. And I swear, the last ticket.
Yeah.
And little did I know that that one interaction, that one purchase would set off a chain of events that has come to be one of the coolest things that I've had. And, you know, hell, I've even got some of our like artwork on my arm, nice. Like, you know, got a fillion and all, like it's amazing how just the decisions we make and then the ripple effects that happen from those. It felt really uncomfortable at the time,
but
I couldn't be proud of where
it's,
we're at now.
It's, you know, sometimes, especially with events and stuff like that, you have to make yourself uncomfortable, you know, like if it's one of those things where you'll grow as a person, you'll grow as an artist, you know, doing things that you haven't been done before or working on projects you haven't worked on before, purposely making yourself uncomfortable in order to try and get that because you won't get there any other way.
No, you won't. And on top of that, I was like 5 months sober.
Nice.
And I used to be the drink in the hand at the, or no, I'm sorry, I was 9 months sober. And I used to be the drink in the hand guy everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of socialization and whatnot. So
especially
that was
camp.
Like,
yeah. Camp, it's, you know, the booze be flowing there.
It is. And it was one of those where it's just like, it's the, you know, you see the videos of like throwing the kid in the deep end and just like, no, like you just figure out like, it just got figured out, and it was nice because then I realized like, oh, it is actually not the booze or the drink that's here. It's all the people and just the humbleness that everyone gets, you know, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, I don't drink. I haven't drank in 17 years or something, you know, but it's like, I used to party a lot with people, you know, and like, you would think that would be like the interactions and the friendships and stuff, at least because that's always what I remembered of it. But it's like, then you start going to events and it's like, oh no, it's not a part of it. It's like, it's actual human interaction, whether or not the people who are drinking remember you the next day, you know, that's a different thing, but yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, it's good. It was a good focus to, you know, be aware of certain things. And it's just been really great.
Yeah. Talk to me about the style, because like I was saying, I'm extremely jealous of the style that y'all bring to the table. As you could see, I'm showing here. It's this 2D illustrative, kind of grungy, you know. Is that typically the type of work that y'all are doing, or is it a whole gambit of stuff?
You know, I would say like it's relatively, it's interesting because I believe like in our default mode, you're going to see us being like, Elisa's application of color is something, it's like if Lisa Frank and I don't know, like somebody else like combined to make this amazing sense of her ability to understand where color is in space. Mm-hmm. And she has this really great way of illustrating items. Andrew himself, underrated illustrator, in my opinion. He would never give himself credit. Fantastic. And then the ability of him to like animate and bring that together just sort of works. And so I generally think like there's some work we don't have up because we're under NDA or whatnot that we've done 3D. And I think for us as a studio younger, we're kind of finding our way, but I don't think it's got to be like we can play any song as long as it's in the key of D, right? Like I think we can play the broadness of it, but we're certainly proud of our default style, which is more 2D and illustrative. But we've just wrapped up some 3D jobs that we're doing and whatnot. So yeah, we kind of run there, but that's our bread and butter. And that's really where I think we shine really, really well.
When people are coming to you for work, are they looking for that specific style, or Is it just, oh, I've met this person or something and they're looking for something and, you know, we can do it?
Yeah. Good question. I think it's probably a mix of both. I mean, we're pretty young. Like, mm-hmm. we're not even a year. Like, we've been working together for over a year, but like, we incorporated in or made it work in like August.
Yeah.
So like, we're still relatively new. And we had one kind of piece that you'll see that's kind of become our calling card because it's just like, it's like super world buildy and it's definitely work that we'd want to do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, more than, I think a lot of times what we try to focus on is like people have a, and I don't know, maybe I'm a square for saying this, but like people have a marketing problem that they're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to understand what is that problem? How can we execute? How can we give you what you need in the time that you need it? And not try to be so style forward. There are some shops that are just, that's their style. And they just want to make, no matter what they do, you know, it's like the old Henry Ford. You can get any truck as long as it's in the color black, right. Like any color trucks. Like, like, I don't necessarily think we're that, and no disrespect to to one or the other. Yeah. But I generally think as we're starting out and kind of finding our ground, we want to eventually get to where we can be more selective, but we certainly want to demonstrate like, hey, we can solve a problem for you. And get you this in what you need. And it's kind of fun, honestly, like, yeah. you know, getting into new challenges and whatnot.
Yeah. I like that. I like that way of thinking. That's, mm-hmm. that's good because, you know, you'll see different studios and stuff and you'll immediately know, oh, that's Elastic. Oh, that's Tendril, you know, and, but not worrying about so much as trying to keep the style, but instead helping to solve a problem. I dig that. I like that.
Yeah. And it's not to say that like, there's nothing wrong with having a particular style and you'll start seeing threads and themes over a period of time. Mm-hmm. I just feel like, we're getting into such an interesting day of age where like styles are like, you know, proliferating forever. Like, but if you can be the person like that person trusts to get something done, mm-hmm. That's you've got a lifelong customer if they can trust you to execute creative. And in our field, I think it's nice to always do work that we love, but the Joey meal and reel, like there's some meals that you gotta do 100%. And you gotta be humble enough to just be like, all right, cool. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And obviously if it's all, you know, if it's all Brussels sprouts and no ice cream, then that sucks.
Yeah.
You know, so you try to mix it, but I don't know. I think to, I wouldn't say survive, but to like, you know, be in the state that we're in, I think everybody's got to be a little bit flexible until they get the reputation of some amazing studios and then people come to them for that
yeah.
work, you know?
Yeah. I like that. How are y'all, what do you guys do to market yourselves? You know, like is a yeah. lot of the work that's coming in through word of mouth, or is it having made connections at different events and stuff like that? They're like, hey, I think you'd be more inclined to this work or so-and-so, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of personal relationships are one of the biggest drivers for us overall. In terms of marketing ourselves, I think it's always an interesting conundrum mm-hmm. because there are so many experts out there that are going to tell you everything that's wrong with your site or everything that's wrong with your positioning and branding. Mm-hmm. For me, we definitely have done a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And what's interesting is we've got some stuff on our Instagram that's gotten very popular, mm-hmm. but we recognize the different audience that it's for. Like I did a post yesterday of like, so like in an ideal world, you know, everything you put out would be seen by somebody who has a dollar or dollars and needs to buy something from you. And they go, oh, great. But marketing's not very transactional like that, mm-hmm. especially in today's day. And so it's a mix of showing some really like Andrew's just a wizard at these behind the scenes and his screen captures and the way that he can demonstrate the techniques that he's pulling off. So that's a big thing. And I call those like the Ford truck dropping lumber in the back of the pickup truck. Like nobody's going to necessarily buy the right. truck because, but they're like, we want to know. It's the same way with the behind the scenes stuff is like, I put out a post on LinkedIn yesterday. It was like, you know, animation rigs for marketers editions, like, should you care?
Yeah.
You know, TLDR, you shouldn't, ... asterisk, right? But you should if you care about ROI, quality, mm-hmm. whatever. So it's just like, it's, I think it's a mix of demonstrating our technical capabilities and what we can do in terms of pulling off a project, But I think this is the secret thing that I'm always looking to figure out is where does that my customer actually care about any of that? Mm-hmm. Like, where does it actually matter to them? And how is the best way I can merge the two and understand the value that we're going to bring to them? Not to take it devoid of like where we're just all like 401ks and like too tight of ties right. or whatever, but like, how do we blend that to demonstrate like, hey, this is, you know, working with us means this, and mm-hmm. there's value in, you know, in paying us when, you know, the bar is just getting higher and higher on that low end.
Yeah.
And so to be out here, we have to be problem solvers. We have to be bespoke. And we have to understand the language of our customers and not try to get too caught up in our own terminology, because as much as you'd like to, it's like, I don't know if you've ever talked to your, if people have spouses or partners and you try to talk to them about something you're really excited about. And like, like I just like dove into Tears of the Kingdom this weekend and like went all in, and it's just like, I'm trying to tell my wife and it sounds like the most ridiculous thing. And I think sometimes for us with our customers, we don't recognize how insular we are as a community sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that we still, as a studio, it's a little different than a freelancer because we're having to go more direct to client a lot of times. And to me, that's a path we want to continue to push forward as big agencies crumble and crumble. It's up to us as the smaller ones to like actually understand what our customers need.
Yeah.
So I know that's a really long way of saying it, but I think it's a mix of both. It's a mix of demonstrating technical prowess, demonstrating the work, but also working to draw, like make that line or like merge those.
Yeah.
So it's like the intersection of marketing creative is one that I think more people should hang out at. And I really think like there's just a lot of misunderstandings on both sides. And I think if both can like dialogue more, we're just going to have a more, we're just going to have more productive conversations.
I think it's interesting, especially showing some of the breakdowns and stuff like that. Like, hey, we're pushing keyframes, you know, this is what we're doing. This is how we achieve this. You know, you not only get the appreciation from some of the artists or the creative directors who are running different, you know, or running the creative in other businesses, you know, but you get the appreciation from the artists, but you also get the appreciation from the businesses as well. You know, it's an interesting way of marketing it. Let me ask you about this. Have you found a lot of success in LinkedIn, posting on LinkedIn and stuff? Because I have, I see I'm on LinkedIn all the time. Because, and I really don't like it. I talk about this a lot on the show, how little I think LinkedIn is actually helpful for artists and stuff like that. And it has really become, when you've been in the ChatGPT world of creating like cover letters and writing things, you start to notice those patterns from ChatGPT, you know, and it's like, oh, this person is using emojis before every bullet point. That's immediately says to me, ChatGPT wrote this. They didn't write it themselves, you know, and I start to notice, you start to see these patterns. And you start to wonder, is LinkedIn even real anymore? You know?
Yeah. I think the interesting thing, and maybe this is my hot take of the day, but like, I think the problem is like with places like LinkedIn, it's this like social network that has this unique place because everybody's going to sort of have a different code of conduct there. And they're wanting to be like authentic and real, but also not authentic and real at the same time. And like, everybody wants to say that. And I think where you get it twisted is when you start, you would think it would just be like a marketplace where it's like, I have a need, I have something, here's my booth. It's like, you would think it's like an actual trade show, but it's at a scale that's tremendous. And so for me, the way I've always looked at it is our window shopping. It's our window dressing about like what happens. I think a lot of people have this, you know, you hear things like the Severance opening sequence, which is so fucking good. And it's like, oh, Ben Stiller found it on Instagram. That's a unicorn. Like your whole career is not going to be that. And so for me, it's more about consistency of voice while also noting that like the thing that's going to make the difference is my relationship with somebody and my ability to form a relationship with somebody. Like cold reach outs on LinkedIn, I do them because I have to. And are they wildly successful? No, there are other people who will tell you that. And then oddly enough, also have a course to sell you.
That's funny.
But I think it's like, you know, it's gotten more fake. It's gotten more ridiculous. But if you can look at it through a prism of this is all the same, how would I be different? You're kind of in the same. It's interesting when I hear creatives talk about, well, these social networks aren't working for me, whatever. I'm like, that's your client's challenge. Like, that's their deal. Mm-hmm. Like, and, but here's the thing, you're asking them for money on something that they don't know.
Yeah.
And so there was this, there's something about old stodgy British dudes that I love. And there was, I forget the name of it. I could probably look it up, but he was basically saying like, everybody in business wants to think that it is absolute certain and pretend that it's certainty. But at the end of the day, it's all, and I'm paraphrasing here. It's all gambles. It's all risks. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of see the gambles and risks that people take. And so to me, it's interesting because we've gotten the illusion that we're important when we're not necessarily important. And I've seen the mistake of so many people trying to craft an online image to people they don't know and are getting paid in emojis mm-hmm. that way, but aren't really focusing on the relationship with a human. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't need, for our studio, I need like 10 good clients. Mm-hmm. Like I don't need to impress fucking 10,000 people yeah. online. Like I don't need to. And I think it's interesting in this, it depends on what your end goal is. For our end goal, we're not selling courses, which there's no shade on that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. We've all benefited from it. It's the creator economy that's come up is great. Like shout out to Jake in Motion, Jake Bartlett, who fun yeah. fact lives like 2 miles away from me. We have coffee all the time. He's an amazing human.
Tell him I said hi next time you see him.
Yeah, we'll do. So, and then you've got, you know, people like the Austins of the world or the Shays of the world that'll do their courses and whatnot. And then you've got more like studios that do that direct studio work. And I think the difference is like for us is like we're not I'm to a position where I need to create a relationship with one person because I'm looking to work with one person for a higher amount mm-hmm. of dollars of a project of scope, whereas other people want to do it at scale so they can sell a $50 thing or a $300 thing.
Yeah.
And I when they merge, I think a lot of people don't exactly know what lane that is and what approach to take. And I think I see a lot of people trying to sell like at a day rate of, you know, let's call it 800 a day yeah. or whatever. They're trying to do it in a way of like how you would sell like an online course and taking that kind of approach or that more like retail B2C approach. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's always the right approach, depending on your end goal mm-hmm. and who you want to connect with. Cause I don't care how many comments and likes I got on something, like how many meetings did I get?
Yeah.
Like that's my big thing. And so it gives you this false sense sometimes of like this weird dopamine that you can't trade. Like, I can't trade emojis for dollars, but you can eventually. I'm not poo-pooing on it. It's just like it just depends on how on what your patience, your time, uh-huh. amount of effort you have, and you know, as a smaller one person's team or whatever, you can quickly think like that's your job to go make all that stuff, but it may not result in financial stuff mm-hmm. in a financial gain. So it's like, you know, it's a tough racket.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I personally haven't found a ton of success on LinkedIn, you know, and with the algorithms the way they are currently, you know, I don't know if it's really interesting looking back at, say, when I first started, or I don't know how old you are.
I'm 43.
Okay.
Old.
So yeah, when we first started, I'm assuming, you know, like you had the creator way of doing it where it's like, oh, I'm going to post on YouTube. I'm going to get a bunch of followers. Mm-hmm. They're going to follow me and then I'm going to make money off of those views, you know? And I think if you got into it really early, you know, mm-hmm. then it can still be wildly successful for you, you know? But then you've got other people like the Winbushes of the world who are just killing it. I love Winbush, you know, because he is all over the place. But like, you know, I don't know when that guy sleeps because
I know he lives. I know he works out a
lot. Yeah, he does. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Number one draft pick in the fantasy, like a zombie fight, yeah. Winbush, not number one pick.
Right. And it's like, you know, with the algorithms the way they are nowadays, You know, I don't know how someone gets their face in front of someone without just bombarding them with stuff all the time and hoping one hits.
Yeah, it's like this weird slot machine, but like, I just feel like it's, I'm not trying to be too, like, too contrarian, but it's just like, just figure out how to actually relate with a actual human person. Mm-hmm. Like, and like, you know, for example, like, you know, I don't know, like I bought shoes. I'm a runner, right? Mm-hmm. So I like bought some shoes, and I swear to God, I got, must have been 10 emails from a company, mm-hmm. like the week after I bought the shoes, yeah. like slow your roll, like just come on. Like I just bought the thing, you know, and it's all, I think people have just like,
you haven't given me a chance to wear them out yet.
Right, like
you
I have not fucking laced them. Like there's no dirt. There's more emails in my inbox than there is dirt on the sole. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, or rocks in the shoe. And so I think we're getting caught that we think that volume is the answer. Mm-hmm. And I guess, but maybe for this, who knows? I may change my opinion tomorrow, but like, I think for us, like, I don't think volume is the answer for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think if you can like reduce that and focus on who specifically do you want to connect with? Mm-hmm. Why is it important that they want to talk to you, and what genuine way can you do to reach out to them? You're going to take like, it's, you're still going to take risks, and that's going to be complete goose eggs.
Yeah.
But at least you're doing something of quality that is going to give you a better shot. And honestly, if you're fishing for clients in the volume game, it's like the dog who chased the car. You may not like that bumper because you may be bumper clients the whole way, and it may just be crap work. And, you know, so I think it's to your own destiny, but I think trying to play that game, it's an arms race where, you know, you're like, I got a cannon and it's like a single loader, and everybody's like, look at my arsenal. And, you know, it just, it's, I think you have to be, if you're smaller like we are, you have to be more specific and smart and strategic and take some bigger bets. Mm-hmm. But I would argue that that's going to be a better and more healthy emotionally, and you'll be more proud of what you do versus where you're just going to get into the volume game and then your quality just dips.
Yeah.
And it inherently may, or you have to have a full team that is really hedging on that strategy. And that's just not one that I do.
Yeah.
There could be another person that could say that that's what they do, and there's no disrespect to it. Just, you're asking my opinion. We can't keep up with the volume game. Yeah. So I'm not going to play that. I'll play a different
game. It's interesting. Like, so I, for those who don't know, I worked at Domino's Pizza for a really long time. Like I worked from the time I was 16 years old till I graduated college. And then I moved to Portland for a year. I couldn't find a job in the industry because this was like pre-social media and I didn't know about like meetups. So I went back to work at Domino's. I worked as a general manager, and we would do the three pizzas for $15, you know? And so it would always be our busiest time of the year because we would do these deals, three medium pizzas for $15. And it was like, it was all about volume, like you were talking about, you know? Like, you would make so much money, but the entire team knew that when those weeks were coming up where they were pushing the 3 for $15, you were going to be working a lot, you know, because you had to do this massive amount of work in order to make just the little bit extra money, you know, because the marketing was so good for it, you know, and the price was so good, like people would enjoy it. But we had to work ourselves ragged. So it's interesting seeing, like, when you're talking about this, you know, creating classes and trying to push out volume and stuff like that, it's always what I come back to.
And there's no disrespect. Like, for those strategies, that makes complete sense. That is absolutely the strategy to go to. The conversation I always hear is more of, as of a freelancer, how do I get booked at a specific studio? Mm. Or how do I find a specific client?
And what's your
my
advice?
Thing is like, start with the word specificity. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's hard. It's hard out here for a pimp.
It is.
Like, it is tough.
I know.
Like, it is. It's not easy. And I think it's okay to acknowledge. And there's a lot of people who won't show receipts, right? They say it, and the receipts they show, who knows if those are real or not. And so, like, to me, we can't lose focus that we only sell our time. we can only scale to a certain amount of time, and that we have to connect with a person. Because I guarantee you, if you do a job well and they trust you, they're not going to just randomly scroll on the internet and go, oh, geez, I see this. Sure, let me hire this person. Right. No, they're going to go, I know the person. Now, over time, they see your face enough, they understand what you're doing and where you're at, then it works.
Yeah.
And then people will call you. It's just, I think everybody's looking to social media to be that you get the dopamine hit of the emoji, but you don't get a dopamine hit of an actual relationship.
Yeah.
And so your brain gets like all twisted because it's like, wait, I got the comment, I got the like, I should be getting the work, but it's like, they're just two different things.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know if you've ever like,
tried no, to
like,
it's interesting. You point it out that way because like I'm currently looking for a full-time job in case anyone has anything that they'd like to throw at me.
Hey,
you know,
yeah.
But I've been looking, and so like I've been sending out resumes and stuff like that. And it's interesting that you talk about that dopamine hit because that it's like I'll wake up in the morning, I'll feel really depressed because like, oh, I haven't gotten a call back or something like that. But then I'll start filling out these applications or sending off my resume, you know, to jobs that would just be fantastic to work at, you know, or someone hits me up and they're like, hey, this person is looking for someone, you should apply for this. I'll put you in, you know, I'll put in a good word. And you start getting these dopamine hits of like, oh yeah, I'm going to get this job. I'm blah, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. And then the next morning you're refreshing your email. You're not getting anything, or you're getting like, you know, the rejection letters after rejection letter. And then you're like, oh man, now I'm depressed, and repeat the whole cycle. By the end of the day, I'm feeling pretty good because I've sent off 8,000 resumes, but then I wake up the morning, I've got nothing. And it's like, I need that dopamine hit again. That's
and the hard thing is like, it's the weirdest thing I think about when you think of like about LinkedIn and work is like, we have given ourselves that dopamine hit way of doing it and thinking that it's there, but it's just tricky because it's a muse that disappears. We're really, it's just like, I just need to meet people and talk to people about what problems they have to solve and meet them where they're at. I don't need to like have some dystopian like brrr, like spam like all this stuff in my face all the time. It's just, it's not a way that you form a relationship. Like humans, I don't know. I think it's, you have to be tactful with it. You know, I would say that, you know, we get emails from people and they're not really genuine. A lot of people are like, look at my reel.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, did you see my email?
Yeah.
I mean, we're busy. We appreciate, you know, the reach outs to people, but you know, taking a little bit more time,
sorry,
to actually connect,
but
it's fine. taking time to actually connect. And I would say the better thing that you can do is put yourselves in a position where you're being marketed to and realize what that feels like.
Okay.
Because you don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
Right. Like I get it all the time. Like, oh, a business owner, I get 5 calls a day about fast cash, business loan stuff. I get hit up on LinkedIn for all of this stuff. And it's just, it's disingenuine garbage.
Yeah.
And that is, so if you can be more genuine and not do garbage, that's the key. But there's just so much disingenuine garbage right now, especially with these AI assistant bots and like, it's just, it's insane. So nobody knows who the hell is a person. So to me, the future is human, at least in what we do. It has to be human. And we're going to get really screwed up if we lose focus on that. And it's real easy to get tricked, but that is not the future.
Yeah.
Is not the future. I believe the future is, at least in the game of what we will always be human to human.
Yeah. How do you feel about the current state of the industry with so many big studios and stuff shutting down? Do you think this is the time for the reemergence of the small studio, or do you think a lot of companies are going to bring it all in house?
That's a good question. I think to me, where it comes to is my take is it's all about the amount of overhead and fixed monthly costs that are happening. So the more that people can have an on and off tap, the better that suits for business. So my thought is that the studios that are getting big have gotten too big and they have too much overhead to carry when times get rough. Yeah. So they're not as nimble enough. And so that's where I think smaller studios, by the way, still can have that exact problem.
Yeah.
Overall. And I think they're just kind of a canary in the coal mine a little bit to say like, hey, if a studio the size of someone doesn't get work over that period of time, you do the math. That's you're racking up a mill.
Yeah.
pretty quick in expenses. So that hurts, and those are bigger. In terms of bringing it in-house, I think the demands, what'll happen is when people come to in-house, they just get more and more generalists that apply. And I just think either their creative needs may not be that consistent, or the type of work that they put out is just, you know, not what they need. So I think the future is small. That's my take. But again, tremendous respect for anybody who ever is doing anything, getting work in this economy period, and to no disrespect. And I think a lot of people have tried to like stamp on the grave of the mill and have all their stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's disrespectful. Like, they tried it, and we should learn from the lessons of what they had and use it as a cautionary tale, but still deliver respect to those people that, you know, built something great. We should learn how that worked and how that didn't work.
Yeah, man, Kyle, I'm loving this insight from you.
I don't know if it's insight. They're just random opinions from old man in office.
That's all right. You can feel the passion, which is great. You know,
it's a lot sometimes. It's overwhelming sometimes. So thanks for being with me, Matt.
That's funny. All right. What are y'all? This is a stupid question because it really doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
What are y'all using on a day-to-day basis? Are y'all mostly After Effects, Cinema 4D? Are y'all using other things, you know?
Let's talk text.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for primarily we use a couple of things. We use After Effects a good bit. Mm-hmm. We'll use you know, really the Adobe suite of products we use quite a bit. We do use Cinema 4D for setting up, you know, so we just did some really cool like product renders and whatnot. So those are kind of the main two areas that we're in. But I will say too, is we really, what we found is that we're always on processes. And the interesting thing I think about the industry and why, so we use Asana. I'm sure everybody's got their own thing, but
management tools?
Yeah, it's okay. a workflow tool. And I highly advise everyone to, even if they're an independent freelancer or doing direct to client work or anything that's not kind of a day rate thing, have some form of workflow software and documentation ready. Because for God's sakes, we make new products every single time that are bespoke and have all of these, you know, potential downfalls. And so for us, we're always using that tool to help drive our capacity in terms of the hours that we know jobs are going to take, how many jobs we need. We can look into the future and know when we can hire freelancers. And it's really easy to get a bunch of friends together for one job and that's all you got and you feel like you're great.
Yeah.
But then wait till you get six of them thrown on your plate and they all need it in that month.
Yeah.
What do you do
then? Yeah.
And if you don't have a basis of a good workflow software, in addition to all the creative tools that you have, you are really going to be in a hard, you're going to have a hell of a time scaling.
Yeah.
I mean, you're gonna have a hell of a time scaling.
Yeah. And so, and if you've already set up those, you know, things ahead of time, then when it comes time to actually have to scale, it's like, oh no, this is easy. Yeah,
it's easier. per se. And you know, and again, the interesting thing is like, I don't necessarily have all the hot takes on software and usability and tools because I made the decision about a year ago to say like, I'm going to focus on building this business and focus on the business aspects of it and get deep into like why cash flow is important, why quarterly P&Ls are different than your monthly cash flows, why, you know, like looking out to form relationships. And it's the hardest thing that I have that there's so much respect that I wish people knew is that so many people try to do too many things.
Yeah.
Like they try to be their accountant, their salesperson, their marketer, their blah, blah, blah. I could list off all the things that somebody needs to be in a modern freelancer today. Mm-hmm. And it's overwhelming.
It is.
And what I found is luckily is a group of people that are like, I worked with Joel Pilger in his group forum, and Joel talks about finding your genius. Mm-hmm. And I have a weird way of saying it because I don't think I'm a genius or anything, but essentially it's where you're great at. Uh-huh. And what's been great is like, hey, Alisa, you're amazing at this. Andrew, you're amazing at this. Kyle, you're good here. And everybody has that focus. That's really allowed us to like strive. But I think it's good and to be honest with yourself to say, I can't do this thing. What other way can I do so that thing can get done for me? So I'm not trying to like always focus on, you know, these hard things. Cause you could get pulled in 10 billion places.
Yeah.
Sorry, I definitely went
it's all right.
on a tangent there.
I mean, as a freelancer, how do you find that thing, or how do you market yourself as the thing that's most important to you or whatever, you know? It's such a, there's so many different ways to go in this industry, you know?
There's so many. And the cautionary tale I see is like, you don't need to be this like massive content creator.
Yeah.
You need to find a couple of studios and say, this is the problem I solve. And this is the results that I get from it. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I do. And I think I was talking to somebody, and I was basically explaining, their name, and I'm like, I shouldn't say their name, but essentially I had a great conversation with a freelancer I tremendously respect. And I was just saying like, so many people focus on like the art and the visual forward, but from a producer's perspective, mm-hmm. I actually care about your reliability, your dependability, all these, and the talent is table stakes.
Yeah.
But like, and nobody markets that. Everybody markets their like fancy, like crunchiest render and all this great shit, but nobody's like, here's how I solve problems.
Okay.
On time and on
budget. And how do you how do you market that? Like,
you gotta try it out. I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to be able to do it, right?
Yeah.
Like there's ways to, you know, you don't always need to make visuals. Like I found a lot of creative freedom just in writing things. Mm-hmm. And not having to get, because once we get into visuals, then we're dumping. Let's be honest with ourselves. One social post we could spend 2 days on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and it's
not
just
to
like,
mention
hey,
you're also competing with all the AI social right. posts that are being yeah. posted, and like, how do you set yourself apart from that? You know? Yeah.
I mean, this is a $1 trillion questions. It's the hardest thing. And I don't have all the answers. I'm out here struggling every day. Mm-hmm. There's weeks where I feel that I'm doing well. And then there's weeks where I go, this is the worst ever. Like this sucks
yeah.
so bad. and I think it's, everybody needs to be honest. There's no magic bullet. You just have to like keep getting up and keep trying every day, but be smart about it and learn and hold yourself accountable, you know, to that. And that's the best thing I could say. And I'm really talking to myself sometimes because it's tough. And I think not enough people are honest about the difficulty that it is because they want to think it's going to be like a big bitch fest. It's like, it's healthy to acknowledge how hard it
yeah.
is.
It's you know? Interesting talking about like marketing the, you know, how you produce the product versus like the actual mm-hmm. product itself. It's like, but then you're also hitting that different demographic where it's like, okay, I'm looking for more of the producer, the more businessy side versus I'm, you know, if I'm posting stuff, it's like, oh, here's where all the artists are appreciative, you know? And it's like, maybe that's the big difference, the big correlation between when I post on Instagram versus when I post on LinkedIn, you know, I don't know.
It's not to say that like artists as our community supporting one another is not the bedrock of our community.
Yeah.
Holy shit. If we don't have that, we ain't got nothing.
Yeah.
So that's core and important. And it just depends on, you know, for some people is understanding that sometimes that may not be enough.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you may need to think into a different mode of like what's actually in it for the client and what's in it for the customer. And those are deep, hard, more existential problems that, by the way, consultants get paid right now. There's some damn consultant mm-hmm. signing a contract for fucking multiple six figures to figure out that question for a company.
Yeah.
So like, it's not easy. It takes a hell of a lot of time. And honestly, do you know how many people hire that consultant again to redo the work that they hired them for
yeah.
3 years ago? That's awesome. So like yeah. an acknowledgement that it is the industry and it is the try. And it's honestly why we get a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's because people try new things. So like, I just think being honest with ourselves about the environment that we're in and that our capabilities and where we want to try and where we're going to take smart bets.
Yeah. I like that. Where would you, in an ideal world, where mm-hmm. would the future of Yon Studio go? Like where
would
it be?
That's a good question. We really want to explore more of our own lore.
Mm-hmm.
And I write a ton of lore.
Yeah.
Like I've written an embarrassingly large amount of lore. I think for us is ideally we want to make sure that we can work in a more imaginative state on and less of a cog and more of a overall wheel where people can come to us and say, hey, we need you to really expand and explore. Like that's the whole thing about Yond is beyond, right? Like get above get Yond to us is, I'm going to get a little, I provided your Kool-Aid, so please drink it now.
I'm in.
Yeah. No, so, yeah. But Yond to us is like, is this sort of celestial plane of creativity that everybody tries to get to, but we are unique in that we are elders of the Yond and we can bring people into this space and help navigate them through this. And so like, we want to explore that more and really trying to bring that fullest life, that full appreciation to a lot of like what's normally relatively stodgy work. Mm-hmm. And to me, I see this really interesting blend. And I know it's like the accountant that's like in love with a stripper, but like, follow me is like the Yond stuff is like exciting and interesting and, uh-huh. and whatnot. But there's also this stuff about like, well, how can I make what I do? Somebody's really enjoying a product that they work with. Or within a company, uh-huh. like how can we make that work for our clients, yeah. you know, and how can we learn, how can we experience ourselves and give ourselves the time to build up lore and do all this, but then how can we apply that to where it's making a difference in someone's life? Either that's from signing up for a program about health that they need, or having a product that's really making a huge impact on their day and their confidence. Mm-hmm. Like how do we do all that? And I know that there's always going to be an intersection of commerce and art, which is known as like design, you know, yeah. like, and yeah, I love it if we could just like fucking get paid to do like our own animated series. But you know, the reality is we still have to figure out how to take our thoughts and our inspirations and our ideas and translate that into what that's going to do for a customer mm-hmm. and how that's going to make an impact on their life. And so for me in 5 years, it's us continually experimenting, failing, mm-hmm. trying, sticking together mm-hmm. and going through this together with that in mind. That to me is like, would be the happiest version of Yond that we can eat. And that's, by the way, devoid of a dollar figure. Uh-huh. I think when people say, oh, I need to be at a 2 million or five, like, I'm sorry, but like, I don't know what the hell you think you're getting with that, but you're going to go to the dollar and not what you want. And I didn't start this with Andrew Delisa's for us to just like, try to just be, you know, a lady of the evening for whoever wants to hire us so that we can get to a dollar. Uh-huh. Like, it's just like, we want to like live our lives the way that we want to live them, raise our families, do what we want to do, do work that's interesting, but also not think like we're a failure because we didn't double sales in the first year. Yeah. Like, give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, and not to say that this scale, like there's people who scale who are amazing at scale. Uh-huh. Like there's some people in forum that are like, God damn, like, holy shit. And that's just, it's not what we want to do. Mm-hmm.
I like the lore. I like the idea of creating lore around your company, you know, like it, Yond, be Yond, like, yes, like go beyond, beyond, we'll help you get beyond. It's like, oh, that's chef's kiss right there, dude.
Well, there's a lot that goes into it. And honestly, I still think if I'm being self-critical, I don't think we've fully realized our potential. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's the thing about like picking up the hammer and hitting the rock every day. Like you have to do that. Cause the minute we don't pick up the hammer is the minute we're fucked.
How do you keep yourself motivated?
Lots of self-help books. I think it's like intrinsically, I think a lot of it is we look to each other a lot uh-huh. to help one another lift each other up. Uh-huh. And some of it is going and putting my feet in the grass and like, you know, just going for a run
yeah.
and realizing that I'm a small speck of whatever atoms in this whole giant universe. And there are some days that are hard. And then there's some days that are there and just realizing I'm here for the longer haul and acknowledging it's okay to have rough days and great days, you know, and it's just a balance, but nothing's promised mm-hmm. and there's no course. To me, it always comes back to your own ability to figure out how your own motivation goes. I struggle with anxiety. I struggle with depression, but I try to figure out how to get through those. And some days are L's. I take the L mm-hmm. on the day. Like I'll take an L. But other days I know I'm going to get the win. And in the long haul, I'll stack more wins than losses. And that to me is the best thing I think we can all try to keep in mind for ourselves.
Yeah. This podcast is full of nuggets. I can't wait to edit this one. Kyle, you strike me as a reader. Are you a reader?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I do read. I've actually gotten more to where I'm getting more magazine subscriptions.
Yeah. I think magazines need to come back.
I'm all hot and bothered about pool, about magazine. But here's why I think it works for me for two things. Number one, when I do art, I'm very collage based, mixed media. And so I love at this last year's Camp MoGraph, Sarah Beth Morgan did this like thing. And I was like, I never had that much access to that much like elementary school level of like volume of supplies. And I went nuts with it. But what I like about the magazine is you can actually get immersed into a topic and get caught in without an ad coming, without a notification coming. And with my family, I can read, but then my kids want to come up and my daughter's got something cute or whatever. I can look at that and take time. It's not like, hold on, you're not caught in that same immersiveness. And so like, to me, I like reading a lot. I found my first creative outlet was writing. Mm. So I do it when I can.
Is it creative writing as well as?
I write about lore. Is the creative writing? Right. I wrote a lot about my sobriety.
Okay.
When I needed to sort of work through some things, I write copy on things. I just think it's such a beautiful tool, and it pains me that a lot of people. That's the first thing. That's probably the number one use case for AI is write me this. And I'm like, but you're not doing the work, like the work in your mind of writing something, like it's this subconscious flow that you can allow yourself. And once you open that portal, then you'll start getting shit from like 100%. Something will pop up and you're like, where the fuck did that come from? It's like, oh, delivery from the portal. Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I opened that whole thing. And when we cut it off, I feel like we're really not allowing ourselves the patience.
Yeah.
To read, to think, to absorb. Like I read the New Yorker. It's so fucking long. The articles are like fucking three times what they should be. But I literally one of them the other weekend, I took a nap in between reading. Absolutely fucking happened. But the beauty of why I read them is like, it's the ability to be patient and listen to somebody's thoughts that are coming through. And we just want the render fast. We just want the prompt fast. Mm-hmm. And we are slowly losing parts of ourselves if we do that too much. So I think everybody should read magazines or physical books and go to their local library, and everybody should write, because I think as creatives, the rest of the world can't do what we do. When they open that portal, the rest of the world is like boring as shit. Mm-hmm. It's like some wind and it's cold. But when we as creatives open that door, holy shit, it's sparks and rainbows and like maybe some crazy fucking guy with a horn. And then, but like, there's so much shit. And like, we just have to keep that portal open for ourselves. Yeah. We have to. And it's fucking hard as hell.
Yeah.
But you got to keep the portal open. And it has to come from simple things like reading and writing.
Yeah. What's really interesting. So for the past year and a half, my New Year's resolution last year was to start reading more. And so by the end of the year, I had hit 35 books, you know?
Hey, yeah, that's good.
That's real good. It's more than I had ever probably read in my whole life, right? Well, this year, we're only into halfway through March, and I'm already at 15 books this year. You know, I make it a point that I always have a book that I'm listening to on audiobook while I'm working and stuff or driving around, and a book that I read at night. You know, and so that I'm just constantly reading. And I have found, to go back to what you were saying, I have found that because I have been reading more, you know, my writing, like when I'm applying for jobs or when I'm writing a cover letter or whatever, I find myself relying less on ChatGPT and being able to just go, you know, and it feels more personal. Like that's the number one thing that I hate about having ChatGPT write for me. I'm like, this sounds like a robot. Stop sounding like a robot. You know? Like if I can recognize it, that it sounds like a robot, make it more personal. But you know? And it's like ChatGPT adds these little things at the end, or like the way they phrase like a list. It's like, okay, that's obviously written by AI. It's not good. It's not good. And you start to see the repetition and the things, you know,
if you bring it back to like kind of if you go to like WALL-E, like in all those people in space, that everything is convenient, and then they're just these like tubby they're cute as shit, but they're these like tubby people that are in this because they forgot what it is to be human. And I think AI absolutely has its place, and I'm sure there's a billion hot takes, and I don't need to dive into that. But what I will say is we need to be honest with ourselves as creatives about we give ourselves up, parts of our soul up, sometimes when we do the work that we do.
Yeah.
I think we'd be, it'd be disingenuous to say you don't.
Yeah.
And the eternal spring is that reading, the writing, the things that you're just doing for you, because everyone that's listening to this felt different in school. Mm-hmm. Everyone wasn't understood by all the kids. Mm-hmm. Everybody wasn't the most popular person, mm-hmm. but there were lessons and things that we instilled in ourselves that we held, and then we found mediums to do it. Just don't lose that portal. Just we have to stay with it. And we can't turn into these lethargic, I don't know, the prompt told me this. Mm-hmm. I just did the prompt. I did, like, you're fucked. Mm-hmm. Like you are losing your main advantage.
Yeah.
For all of yeah. us. So
yeah.
Sorry, I do sound like a fucking inspirational. Oh, I don't know what's gotten into me today. Sorry.
we need to do a quarterly update with Kyle about the world and the yeah. universe.
Yeah, me and Tony Robbins will hit it up. But a lot of it, I mean, candidly, a lot of it's stuff that I'm learning myself and telling myself, because it's, you know, these are tough times. These are, mm-hmm. you know, it's not always glamour and glitz. It's fucking raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it so much. But yeah, seriously, we need to have you back so that we can talk some more. But yeah, it's fantastic. Where can people find you? If they are looking to check out some of your work and everything?
Sure. You can find us at Yon Studio on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And we also are there on LinkedIn. Those are our two main social channels that we're on. You can also find us at yon.studio on the website. So feel free to reach out. Just don't have ChatGPT writing thing. I love dialoguing with people when it's actually genuine response. Yeah. But yeah, that's where everybody can find us.
Awesome. All right. Thanks everyone for joining. Cool. Make sure to follow us on all the socials, especially YouTube and Twitch. We've been doing our weekly MoGraph hangouts this last week. We were able to get dynamic CSVs working with After Effects stuff. So we just wrote one single script referencing a CSV and duplicated like our compositions over and over and over again. And they dynamically updated with the compositions, which was so much fun. If you're interested on downloading that project file, I put it up in my projects or my products tab on my MoGraph page. You can go to mattmilstead.mograph.com and you can download it if you want to do that. Those are typically Thursday night, 7:30 Central. We will probably not do one this week because ABC is having their big party this weekend and there are a bunch of people coming into town. So I may do one. If I do, listen to the Slack or the Discords or whatever, I'll send everyone a message. But yeah, also if you haven't done it, make sure to sign up for your very own MoGraph.com account. It's a one-stop shop for everything a motion designer needs. You can showcase your demo reel, projects you've worked on, post jobs, apply for jobs, sell your digital goods, find meetup groups, or start one of your own, and so much more is planned. We currently have almost 700 members and are growing. We're an artist-first site where your work will always be yours and never be fed to an AI machine. So stop feeding your work to Zuck's AI machine and start posting on MoGraph.com. So thanks everyone for coming and hanging out. Kyle, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. Until next week, I'm Matt. And you are?
I'm Kyle.
We'll see you later. Later, yo.
Later, y'all.
Pretty good, I guess.